in one way.
Easy, but.
A lopsided.
Lean in one way, okay.
This council meeting committee of the whole is called to order for April the 18th, 2017. I'd like to welcome everyone today. Under 1.0, 1.1, changes approval of agenda. Do we have any changes or amendments to the agenda? Councilor Johnson?
I'd like to do an addition to the in-camera session. We can entitle it procedure and protocol possibly.
That's not something that would, that's not something that would fall under, something we're allowed to do in camera for.
How about 4.2 under CAO's office?
Okay, sure.
Procedural issues?
Yes.
Okay, we have an addition under 4.2, procedural issues. Any other? I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda. Moved by Deputy Mayor McLeod, seconded by Councilor Fisk. Any discussion? Ready for the vote? All those in favor? It is unanimous, thank you very much. 1.3. Okay, we'll go back to 1.2. Don't want to jump here. Approval of the committee of the whole minutes, March 21st, 2017, a motion. Councilor Fancy, seconded. Councilor Fisk, any discussion? All those in favor? It is unanimous, thank you. Now we are to 1.3, public comment session. Are there any persons in the gallery who would like to comment this morning?
Mary White of 1022 East Meadows Road. I would just like to say that I really enjoyed the information that we received on the landfill, and I think that if anybody here has ever viewed another landfill, that you will see how far ahead they actually are, and that there's a possibility of maybe increasing some revenue there by maybe putting some tours in for other communities who would hope to have a landfill that looked like that, as well as some tours for young people, so that they can see how important it is. Because really, I don't know if anybody's ever been to another landfill, but this is incredible. Like, it's a place you'd like to go, you know, and there's rats and smells and, oh, it's terrible, right? So I think that we should run with that and try to be a leader in Nova Scotia as far as recycling goes.
Thank you, Mary. Leon?
Yes, Mayor, I think that just in addition to what this lady has mentioned here with respect to landfill, yes, it is, I haven't been out there recently, but I know it's a good operation. I was here as CEO when we developed the first cell for the operation. Prior to that, our engineering works supervisor and myself and a couple of counselors, we went around to different areas with respect to looking at landfills and looking at incineration, because it was at a time when we still use incineration, but we found that this was the cheapest. One of the places that we mentioned was the, and I'm not sure what it looks like now, but back then it was East Kent, in that area, and they had a landfill there, and an operator there, and we were there just at that site, and it was very nice. The operator had flowers planted on each, nice flowers planted on each side of the gate, and she moved the landfill, which made it very nice, and I said, $20 for the people. But there are some landfills and there's some around that help really well. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other person in the public gallery like to comment today? Thank you so much. We will now move on to 2.1. Presentation geocaching. I would ask David and Melinda Brown if you'd like to come forward.
Table here?
Yes, if you would, at the front of the table.
Thank you very much for the invitation to speak today. You can all hear me.
talked, Susan asked me to come and give a brief presentation on geocaching. And we have one friend we met through geocaching that I've got to give a shout out to right now is Dolores. She told me if I didn't come and meet Richard, she was going to stop giving me balloons. If any of you have met Dolores, she's a free spirit. So she holds a, it's on. She's a geocacher in the city, and when they have events, she usually comes around and gives out balloons to the kids, and she told me I wasn't getting any more. So as a brief overview, geocaching, for anybody who doesn't know, is a high-tech treasure hunt. It uses GPS or a smartphone, and there's a website called geocaching.com where you get the information. People hide containers in the woods or towns, anywhere else, that hold logbooks. And the main rule of geocaching is you find the cache, you sign the logbook, you record it online. That's basically, you know, the rules of the game. You can download the coordinates to your GPS, or you can use a smartphone app, which is freely available now. Accounts are, they have free accounts that you can sign up for, or you can have a paid account, which has a bit more functionality. But for the most part, you know, geocaching presents itself as something that you can do at low cost. You know, it's not a sport or a hobby where you have to spend a lot of money to buy the gear. You can do it with the things that you mostly have. And most geocachers identify themselves by nicknames. So, you know, in the geocaching community, Melinda and I are Black Rattle. We live on Black Rattle Lake, so sometimes it's hard to find a nickname. So brief history of it is, on May 2nd of 2000, President Bill Clinton signed an order that ended what they called selective availability. And selective availability was what the US military had to make the GPSs less accurate so enemies of the state couldn't use coordinates to attack them. That all ended in 2000. On May 3rd, which is one day later, a gentleman named Dave Ulmer from Oregon hit what is considered the first geocache in Beaver Creek, Oregon, and he did it to test how accurate the GPS system was. He hid a container in the woods and he posted the coordinates on a bulletin board just to see if anybody would find it. Within 2 days, it was found by a gentleman named Mike Teague. And about a month later, as the growing popularity came, Mike Teague started collecting these coordinates and geocaches and put them on a website. And it was called the GPS Stash Hunt. Closer to home, on June 28th of 2000, Ken Kane, who's also known as East River, hid the first geocache in Canada, which is just outside of East River, Nova Scotia. And on September 2nd, 2000, Jeremy Irish started a website called geocaching.com, which was really the start of the hobby as we know it. And on March 24th, 2001, the first geocaching event was held in Austin, Texas, so that the budding number of geocachers could get together and meet. Locally, the oldest geocache in Queens County is at the border of Kedgy Park, and it was placed on July 5th in 2001. And the oldest cache in South Queens is in Pine Grove Park. It's an old ammo can that's been sitting there now since April 30th, 2004. So for 13 years, people have been coming to Pine Grove Park to find that geocache. There were quite a few early geocachers. John Leaf was actually one of the first geocachers in Queens County, and about the time he was mayor. But many have gone by the wayside, other interests come up, or you can only find a geocache once. So as there's no more new ones to find, people kind of drift by the wayside. And at this point, I would currently estimate that there are 700 to 800 geocaches hidden in Queens County, and there are 28,000 to 30,000 in Nova Scotia for people to find. There's probably about 50,000 geocachers in the province, just in Nova Scotia alone. So there is quite a pool of people that we can attract. Some of the benefits of geocaching are recreational. I mean, from a recreational standpoint, we can get people out, we can get them using our trails, using our parks, and seeing the area. I know of at least one doctor in town who is a geocacher who is recommending geocaching to some of her patients as a way to get out and get exercise. So, you know, it's there's some benefits that way. From a tourism perspective, it can be a way to get people to see areas that they may not have gone otherwise. It can show the municipality in different ways and could be a a way to show people some of the other hidden gems that we have in the county, maybe take some of the pressure off, you know, some of the overdone areas that we have, like, you know, Carter's Beach is seeing the, you know, damage from the popularity. If we could spread some people around, you know, maybe we could find some more hidden gems and spread the wealth around a little bit. From a marketing perspective, we can strive to make Queens County a geocaching destination. It is already fairly well known for the events that we already host, but maybe more could be done to spread the season. The camping spots at the Hank Snow Museum have already attracted people who have come to stay in town and who would normally have come just to make a day trip. So, you know, we've put people in town overnight by having that, so which we really like. And it could be included as a list of things to do for guests who stay at hotels or come, you know, for other businesses. One of the other things we're looking at is a possibility. There's a type of geocache called a Warigo, and it's you use your GPS and you go from point to point, and as you get to each location, it opens up the next phase of the journey. And we're looking at possibly putting the Queens County home tour on as a Warigo, so people can come and get it. It's an app that you can use on your smartphone that will take you from point to point and open up the next phase of the journey. It has also been our experience that people who come for geocaching love the area. I mean, we get nothing but positive feedback. They tell their friends, and many of them make return trips. They discover the area is off the beaten track, and word of mouth has really, you know, really spread the area. Excuse me. I'm talking too fast, or you can't hear me, I'm sorry. one of the initiatives that we've got going forward is geocaching every year does what we call a CITO event, and it's CITO, it stands for Cash In, Trash Out. And next weekend, we're doing a CITO event in Sandy Cove. We started last year, we did our first one with Susan McLeod. We approached her for her district, and we looked at the areas, and we thought that the area for the Run for the Shore would be a good area to clean up to you know, to kind of show people the best face of Queens County that we could at the time. We had 25 people come from as far away as Yarmouth and Halifax to help us pick up garbage. Plus, Susan was there. We had a few local people, and Kellyanne Hurley and Virginia came and picked up the garbage. And we ended up in that one, even as cold as it was, we collected over 500 pounds of garbage on the side of the highway to take to the landfill 10 mile, which they accepted and sorted for us, which we really appreciated. Another big event for us is Privateer Days. Privateer Days event we call the Letter of Mark because we tie it in with the you know, privateering heritage of Queens County, and it's done through the Privateer Days Commission. And we generally bring in about 120 people a year to this event. Funding comes from Privateer Days, and we do geocaching coins. I don't know if you've been, any of you have seen the coins. I wasn't sure of the setup here, but I've got a few coins to show if anybody wants to see one. Some of these are different types of coins. Not all of them are the ones for Privateer Days. But for the cost of about $2,000, we buy these coins each year. And we give four different finishes. We have copper, silver, gold, and black nickel. Copper we give to everybody who attends the event. So people really love that. Silver we sell to try to recoup a little bit of the money, buy prizes for the event. Gold we give away as prizes at the event, and the black nickel, which is the most prized because we only make 20 out of the each year, we geocache around the province, we try to drop one in each county. Then we post on social media that there was one drop there for people to find, and there becomes a race. So people are tracking, as we go to events and go places, people are asking us, have you dropped a coin today? You know, so they know Black Rattle, they know Queens County, they know Privateer Days. So it's really generated a lot of interest in the area through geocaching. So it's you know, it's for a small amount of money. You know, we did the first year that we did our Privateer Days, we did an economic impact, and I think our budget that year was $1,500, and we generated about $20,000 of economic return, which, you know, in the long run is a small amount for a whole county, but if everybody can do a little bit, you know, we can generate a lot, and I think it can go quite a bit higher. So that was those. Last fall, we teamed up with Kathy Pearl and Kevin Wenzel and the Region of Queens Recreation Department, and we did a passport series. And what a passport series is we hit 35 caches all through Queens County. And people have to find all 35 of them, and inside each container is a code word. So they have a paper that they have each geocache listed, and they write the code word in. When they get all 35, they can bring their list into the Region Recreation Department, and they earn a coin. So each coin is worth, costs about $8 to make a coin. So it's not a huge cost. I think it was $1,500 for the whole series to get everything done. And I think the cost is recouped in one day, but I think the goodwill generated by the number of people coming and seeing the whole county, because we placed the 35 geocaches around the whole county, and each one is a historical write-up of that area. So, we've taken people to some of the most beautiful areas we have in the county, some of the most historic areas, and many of them are coming back. So, that's a really good benefit that we see. And each year, for the last two years, we've been a part of this, but for the last 5 years, Kedgy Park has had a series of geocaches that they place out, and to do those geocaches, you earn a coin as well. This year, we were lucky that we were able to partner with the group Hiding It, and their kickoff event is the day before the Privateer Days event. So we're hoping that by partnering two events together, we're going to make it more of a destination, which has worked in the past. We've seen how Barrington and Yarmouth have gotten together to hold events on 2 days, and it brings people in for a weekend. So I think it attracts a lot more people. Okay, so going forward, some of the things we have in the future is a potential GeoArt project, which is hiding geocaches. When people go on the geocaching.com website, there's a map that shows all the geocaches. So what we do is we place geocaches in a way that when you look at the map, it makes an art installation. So it takes 65 geocaches to do the art, so people will come and it'll take a day or two to find it. So we'll put people in the county, get them to see the area, but it also gets people talking about it. So it becomes a destination for people to do. And we would like to see the sport grow somehow. There's not a lot of people in Queens County at this time that are geocaching. We found that a lot of the people who geocached worked for Bowater at the time that it was running. A lot of them are working in other areas now, or life changes. So, the number of active geocachers has gone downhill quite a bit. So, if we could work with the Recreation Department to, maybe hold events, intro to geocaching would be, a wonderful thing. It would be great if we could get businesses to offer geocaching, or mention it to their guests that are staying there. If they mention that the region has GPSs for loan, because I think there's 3 or 4 units that are here that they loan free of charge to get people out. So they'll load the geocaches in, people can go out and they'll discover the area. It gives people something else to do. And we could possibly do tie-ins with events for other festivals that are going on. So. I know we're working right now with a group. There's in August, there's a geocaching mega. It's a maritime mega geocaching event that takes place in Truro, which is quite a ways away from Queens County, so there's not a lot of spin-off for us, but we've also started working with some of the local hotels, restaurants, and we've approached a couple so far and working on more to put together a package of stay and play for a prize package for this mega event. That is attracting people who have already signed up to coming from Europe, the United States, all of Canada. And if we could put a package together to bring people, that they could come and have a hotel stay, a meal, something to do. I think, Parley's has said that they would do something, like a bike rental or a kayak rental or something like that. So if we can stay and play, then we can, draw people from other areas and show what Queens County has to offer. I think, Queens County has a lot to offer, and people really, really say things. I just copied a couple of geocaching logs that we received in the last few days. This was from a couple who came from New Brunswick, met with a family from Halifax, they came and stayed in Queens County for the weekend to do the passport series. Said a fantastic tour and a well thought out cache. Thanks for bringing us here because we would have driven straight past. No, sorry, this is the other one. Continuing our Canadian holiday with a day driving from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia to Halifax, accompanied by Escava and Naughty, who kindly provided the transport. This was written by a couple who were here from England, who met people in Yarmouth, were traveling through, and we have one cache that people really like, and it's called a letterbox cache, but it takes you all through Cosby's sculpture garden, which I have to tell you is probably one of the unfound gems of Queens mm-hmm. County. Nobody who goes there is ever disappointed, you know. And we've had people on our Facebook friends who have come down to do the passport series. They've showed pictures, showed their friends, and their friends have come to Liverpool to see it. You know, it's a real draw attraction. You know, maybe it's something that could be advertised a little more. This is the couple from New Brunswick. Wibble and I traveled from New Brunswick and met up with Upsweek from Halifax to complete the Queen's Crown Passport Series. The scenery in many of the locations was second to none as we visited many points of interest while learning about the history of the area as well as current points of interest. Thanks to the organizers and cashers for putting out the hides and giving us a grand tour. Greatly appreciated. So these are people that drove from New Brunswick, spent the weekend at Morton House Inn, all to earn an $8 coin. So, you know, there's some potential for marketing there. So that's really all I have to say about geocaching, and I'm sure I left you with more questions than answers, but if you have any questions, I feel free to ask.
Any questions or comments from councilors?
Do you guys put on the thing that I thought was geocaching?
If I may, Mr. Grant?
Sorry.
It's not appropriate for members of the gallery to ask questions at the presentation.
Oh.
That's the public gallery question period that we allow for that.
Okay.
But I appreciate your interest. any councillors? Deputy Mayor McLeod?
I guess Dave knows how I feel about this. It's very exciting, and you have a passion for it. And
yep.
I'm hooked. I hadn't done anything up until we organized that event last September.
Okay.
And my international student, and she and I have been out searching. We haven't been out for the winter months, but
no.
That's our main project. And I just think it's amazing. And all the benefits are wonderful. And, you know, we really have to cash in on this big thing because that's what we have to do.
I think there is some potential. I think the word of mouth, like getting people just to see the areas that we have to offer and getting word of mouth out is something that is a real benefit to this, I think.
There was a couple in a few cemeteries in the area, close to the cemeteries.
Yes.
And that was another discovery for me because, you know, you get looking around at the headstones and then you get a little bit of history there too. So
yes.
It's really interesting how you pick up something else along the way that you've never really had an interest in before.
Yeah.
As another type of, you know, recreation opportunities. So.
It is, yeah.
Or historical.
We always say that geocaching shows us, people show their favorite area, you know, in their hometowns. So you're always going to find somebody's favorite area or somebody's passion. And that always bleeds through when you do the caching. Thanks.
Councillor Johnson?
Dave, that's excellent for an educational perspective.
Thank you.
From my point, was something that I wasn't really up to speed on, but understanding the benefits. Are you open to come to like the North Queens Board of Trade to speak to those groups and spread the word and see what those folks can do to help you in your endeavors?
Yes, I would.
Okay, so I'll get your contact information before we go and get that group on board, get you out there and promote what you're doing. It's excellent stuff.
And when we did the passport series, we did some talking with the people at the North Queens Tourism Bureau. And there is a geocache right at their tourist bureau, so and they're very passionate about it as well. So it'll be great to deal with them.
Thank you. Councilor Fancy?
Yes, Dave. I remember back in the mill, going up and meeting, sitting in your cubicle. You tell me about it back then.
Yeah.
I know it's been a passion for a long time with you.
Yeah, it's been 7 years for us now.
Yes, and. I think a couple comments and then a question for you is I think that the health end of it is getting people out around doing things non-competitive, though it's competitive, but it's non-competitive, which is more what people you know, there's so many things that are competitive that people can get out and try to find this for your own benefit.
Yes.
I remember back my last year in school, I was up in J.L. Ellsley, and I remember that was the first time I knew about GPS.
Yeah.
And I remember going, and they gave us a thing we were supposed to run and spot and find things. I had about 20 people following me because I was, if we were doing it at our school,
right.
We got lost big time. So it's the other end of that is that it gets people to know how to use the GPS if you're in the woods. I mean, that's a good thing too because
yeah.
So many people get lost and such as, and it gives you ability to be able to use those type of things.
And hopefully, as you know, as we talk to people, we tell them that you can't depend on a GPS because
no.
You know, you have to also develop some common sense with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've all seen stories in the news of people who followed their car GPS
mm-hmm.
into a swamp or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's great that way. And I know on Saturday I was telling them out there, I ended up going swimming while geocaching. We'd gone for a geocache down on 10 Mile Lake. So it was all the way down to Birch Island on 10 Mile Lake, and as I got out of the kayak, 1 foot went one way, the kayak went the other way. The next thing I know, I'm swimming in 10 Mile Lake in early April. So.
Just to follow two things. Have you looked at going to the schools and trying to get them involved with this and trying to get the education to the young people?
I know Kathy Pearl and Kevin Wentzel have done some with the schools, and she was a school teacher, so she, you know, she taught some of it in the school program. Mm-hmm. Hadn't really thought too much about doing it in the school system, but that would probably generate some more interest.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the age demographics. Do you find it's mostly older people, and could that be done? I always say, can we do that can we do something in a shoulder season that could actually benefit the area?
I found that you know, when we first started geocaching about 7 years ago, that the demographic was older, closer to retired people, and it was mostly military people because they had more experience with GPSs at the time. I find now that the demographic is switching to be younger people. You know, because geocaching.com has gone to an app based, where you can do it on your smartphone, it's attracting more younger people. You know, it's a free download app, it's a free membership, it's something that they can do, you know, with no setup costs other than the phone that they already have. So you're starting to see more technologically advanced younger people getting involved in it. But I find that the younger people right now, it's harder to maintain them in the sport. You know, they'll go and they'll do it for a little while and then they're on to the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we constantly have to be evolving what we do and changing it. And part of that is like, what the geocache you can only find once. So once somebody's been to an area and they found all the geocaches, they generally don't come back. So what we try to do is take up the geocaches and replace them. So it's a constant battle for the people that hide it. I mean, it's a fair commitment to those of us who hide geocaches to go out and maintain them, because if somebody goes and logs it and the log book is wet, then we have to drive there to replace it. The next week we could find out the next one's wet. So, you know, you're back in the same area. So the only geocaches you ever visit twice are the ones that are your own. And they're sometimes the hardest to find because people move them. They're never where you left them. And it's, you know, it is kind of an expense for people. So you have to have a passion to do it. You know, hiding a geocache is probably, I would say, like a $3 to $5 proposition. You know, just to hide it, to buy a container, to get the logbook, to put a few little toys, trinkets, and things like that in. It's not a huge expense, but it's, you know, it's something that comes out of your pocket every time.
Mm-hmm.
And people who have a passion don't mind it. So, you know, with the hiding in the caches, you know, we say 700 to 800 in Queens County, 400 of them are ours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've placed 400 in the county. So it's you know, it's a fair time constraint, but we enjoy it. So that's what we love getting the logs. Every time somebody finds a geocache and writes their log online, we get it as an email. The first year that we did geocaching, we hid geocaches. You can only put them 165 meters apart. They can't be any closer than that. So we started on the rails to trails at the Trestle Trail, and we stopped at the Shelburne County line. And the first year we had privateer days, people came, and I got 8,000 emails that week. Cooked the battery in my BlackBerry.
Councilor Fisk? Just a great presentation,
Thank you.
Interesting stuff that presented today. Amazing that in Councilor McLeod's area that you took a group and went down through and collected the garbage along the road.
Yes.
And come up with 500 pounds in a very short time, I bet you.
Yeah, it was about an hour and a half.
An hour and a half.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And then they have to send up landfill and they sorted it out for us another.
Yeah. And, you know, it was really nice to, you know, I really got to congratulate Kellyanne for bringing, you know, the region truck in to pick it up. So, I mean, it was her day off. And to do that stuff, we really appreciate it.
Now, the membership in the Queens, area, how many do we have?
Roughly, I would say right now we get logs from about 25 or 30 active people. You know, so there's not a huge amount. And you know, a few of them have gotten older. You know, I know some that were fairly active who have health concerns right now that I'm hoping will get active again. But and there's new people coming on all the time. Every log we get is we see new names. So we're hoping that, you know, we're generating interest. And
what age group is usually involved more?
I'm finding right now that the main age group we see is probably 40 to 60.
Okay.
You know, it's probably, you know, if I was looking at a graph, I would say that would be the, you know, the median would be, you know, the 40 to 60 age group who are consistent.
You certainly opened my eyes.
Any other questions or comments from councilors? Well, thank you very much, Dave. Very interesting presentation.
Thank you for allowing me the time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coins,
thank, you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now I can get some balloons.
They have her dragging my own information.
Oh, she's a child. She said before geocaching, she's never been to Liverpool, and she was here 8 times last year geocaching.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
We will now move on to 3.0 planning. We have under 3.1 a presentation on the transportation feasibility study. I would ask Gary Jones if he would come forward.
I volunteered to do the presentation.
Probably need some more lights out there.
Sure.
Is it too shiny?
No reflection yet.
Okay, so we have with us Gary Jones from the Queens Care Society. I volunteered to do the presentation on this transportation feasibility study that the region in Queens partnered with the Queens Care Society to complete over the last year. The study was funded by the Nova Scotia Transit Research Incentive Program, NSTRIP. And the objective of the report were to evaluate two critical questions. How do we understand and articulate the need for community transportation in the region of Queens? And secondly, how do we meet the community's transportation needs through a service that is feasible and sustainable? So to begin answering these questions, WSP consulting firm was hired to undertake the following deliverables: to assess the need by analyzing the study area's physical geography and assets, analyzing census data, developing an understanding of the potential users, providing relevant case study examples from other rural public transportation systems and developing an understanding of community needs through an online survey, as well to assess the feasibility by creating preliminary route collaborative scenarios, conducting some high-level costing analysis, and integrating community feedback to preparing costing and scheduling for the transportation services. So while this needs and feasibility report was initiated in the fall of 2016, the need for public transportation was actually identified a couple of years ago. At the time, Queens was acknowledged as being one of the most poorly serviced areas in Nova Scotia for seniors' well-being and lifestyle. As a result, a number of concerned residents got together to form the Queens Care Society, a registered society whose goal has been to improve the lives of seniors living within the region's communities. So early in 2016, Queens Care and its partners, including the region, commissioned Dalhousie University to distribute a region-wide resident survey to help develop an understanding of the current state and future needs on housing and transportation amongst members of the community. The survey found that while the lack of public transportation may not be as pressing today, there certainly will be a need for it in the future as the population continues to grow. The consultant worked with the steering committee known as the Queens Transportation Working Group that was led by members of the Queens Care Society. Other members in the group included representatives from the region, the Victoria Order of Nurses, the RCMP Senior Safety Program, the Nova Scotia Health Authority, and South Shore Helping Hands. So the mission has been to work together and plan for implementing a region-wide transportation service that is community-based, not-for-profit, and available to be used by all residents. So the geographic area under study is the region of Queens, approximately 2,400 square kilometers, focusing on the most populated areas located through the region. Liverpool, the most densely populated area, and centrally located, Port Mattoon and Port Medway are two other shoreline population centers, and then Greenfield and Caledonia, situated 30 and 50 kilometers north of Liverpool. So the most recently collected data from the 2016 census shows the population for Queens to be about 10,307 individuals. The breakdown of the population change over 20 years compares the statistics for Queens to the province, which demonstrates while the province has been experiencing slight populations over the 20-year time period, Queens has been decreasing, with the largest losses occurring between 96 and 2001 and 2011 to present. So an analysis of the age structure for Queens indicates demographic trends that will affect delivery of services and market opportunities in the region. Queens shows a heavier representation of a senior population. Queens has the highest representation than the province, with our median age being 6 years older than the rest of Nova Scotia. So that's an overview of the age demographics that we have. Again, on this slide shows similarly that we need to be cognizant of this as we look at a community transit plan and how it might serve the elderly now and in the future. As well, a summary of household income brackets for Queens and Nova Scotia as a whole shows that the median household income in Queens was $40,265, which is about $7,000 lower than that of the province. As such, affordability will be a factor when planning a community-based transportation system. So then we have a few slides just showing the driving distance from the Liverpool Center. Within about 5 minutes from Liverpool, we cover a population of about 5,100. Within 10 minutes, 7,000. Within 20 minutes, 8,900 residents, and within 45 minutes, 11,000. So there are some existing transportation services. The VON offers individualized trips for residents who are elderly or ill. The volunteer drivers operate two vehicles daily. The North Queens Helping Hands is a volunteer-driven service that assists residents in North Queens by doing at-home visits, prescription grocery pickups, and minor household repairs. The SoSure Helping Hands is another volunteer-driven transportation service that's just started in the region, primarily focused on assisting seniors who are still dependent. Private taxi services are available in the region area. At the time of writing, there were three companies that operate out of Liverpool and one out of Milton. So based on our understanding of the current demographics, existing community-based transportation services in Nova Scotia, and our understanding of the target user groups, we anticipate that this public transit service for RQM would serve five distinct user groups: seniors, persons with disabilities, disadvantaged or low income, students, and shoppers. Although it's important to understand that the service will aim to service all demographics and users, it's important to be familiar with the target markets, as they are most likely to influence future transit scheduling and routing options. So potential service options for our rural community transportation system include a fixed route service, you know, a predetermined route, stops, pick up destinations and times, a door-to-door service, which would be advanced notification of pickup times, locations, and destination, a fixed flex route service that uses a regular scheduled route with the ability to make minor deviations, or a scheduled zone service, sort of a door-to-door, start at a fixed location and time, and travel along the main route with the ability to deviate or to pre-book. So some of the consultation results presented here show that there was a high number of residents that did identify frequent access to a vehicle, but indicated that they would be interested in community-based transportation services. And it was dependent on a number of variables. So the sort of destinations that community transit would provide would be for things such as shopping, medical appointments. And these findings were supported at the consultation meetings that were had. So respondents said that they would typically use it 3 days or more per week. Typically, routine check-ins and appointments for those that require them, done at least 1 day a week, combined with shoppers and to those looking to do general errands, showed the general demand that serves the area at least once a week is evident amongst the service respondents. We also saw you preferred time for trip departures, generally looking at, you know, mid-morning, mid-afternoons. And, you know, obviously there was a range of desires for what type of services to use. So the question was also asked around fees, testing around $5 per round trip fee. Generally, residents were looking to pay less than $5 per round trip. So what features were important in the decision? Fares and fees, the pickup and drop-off locations, time of day, the timeliness, and comfort of the trip. So these sort of things come into place. So when looking at these service options, it was the recommendation of the consultant that a hybrid system be used, which is a combination of fixed flex route and door-to-door services. The service would have a bus driving a regular route, but able to deviate within 5 kilometers to accommodate door-to-door service for qualified passengers, coordinated through a central dispatcher. It was also identified that the most common destination in the region was Liverpool, as the primary growth area for Queens, and the 4 other areas would be Caledonia, Greenfield, Port Mattoon, Port Medway, Mill Village. So here's a couple of potential route diagrams. You know, first, South Queens communities going from Port Mattoon, Port Medway. Port Mattoon, a loop around Western Head. This shows the Port Medway, Mill Village potential route. And then obviously routes that would go north. The study also completed some basic costing and budgetary implications, which give us some reality to check in, you know, what the viability and feasibility is of such a program. And it shows that, you know, for an annual deficit of about $50,000 a year in the long term, we could potentially have a regional community transportation service. So at the end of this, a number of recommendations were made to carry this on and apply for funding for the development of a business plan to really refine that budget and to look at other potential funding opportunities. The second was to check on the availability of the Hillsview bus. Generally, as we examined that idea, it's not really available on a dependable basis for scheduling. Looking towards us, towards funding to help support the remaining phases of TRIP, establishing a relationship with the North Queens Helping Hands, South Queens Helping Hands, and VON, potentially hiring a transit coordinator to act as the central dispatcher for the program, implement a service that combines the fixed flex route service and door-to-door coordination with volunteer drivers, and determine and implement tools to gather and analyze data collected during the pilot project, and ensure that the Queens Transportation Service continues to serve the needs of the various communities. So what we have done is we have applied for funding from Nova Scotia TRIP to examine the business plan and to continue to examine the viability of a regional community transportation service, and we're all continuing to work together on that. I'm not sure the timing of when we'll hear on that funding. I would anticipate in the next month or so. With that, that's the overview of the transportation feasibility study. I don't know if Mike or Gary would like to add anything in on that.
No, I think you've done very well. You told me to say nothing.
No, I didn't say that.
And you listen.
Should I turn on the lights?
I'd just like to mention, as far as the Queens Cares Society, we started this, as Richard mentioned, back in 2015, and we did the first study ourselves, and that is in the back of the report, those results. And those results were also included in the study that WSP has put together. So it's quite conclusive of all the information in a short period of time. And then Dr. Karen, what's her name, in Foster from Dalhousie, pulled this together and did all the analysis of the charts and graphs. So this was not done by Richard's group here. We went to a professional, no offense, Richard, but we went to Dalhousie to have them analyze the information. So there is substance to that. Mm-hmm. Also, another point, with the Queens Care Society, we are an advocating group for seniors. But in this particular study, this is all inclusive. It has to include everyone. So that is why it's more encompassing that we can even go to Greenfield and pick you up, Raymond. We can't.
Well, you missed me. I was in Middlefield.
Oh, pardon me.
Yes.
So.
Any questions by councilors? Deputy Mayor McLeod?
I have maybe a suggestion. I'm not quite sure. I always come with these weird and wonderful ideas and try to get support. But I'm looking at hire a transit coordinator who will act as a dispatch person if you get this project, you know, and it's go.
Yes.
I know HGS might be some area, some local firm that might be available to contact them and ask them if they may have someone within their staff or a group of them in there. They might coordinate and partner with you on that dispatch.
Well, that's an
project.
Excellent idea, Susan. And we have, that has been brought to our working group, that has
okay.
been brought to us as a
yeah.
suggestion.
Yeah.
And to go
they
on.
They certainly have the skills,
yes.
the cold skills.
The seniors' wheels in Bridgewater,
mm-hmm.
they use the business group there in Bridgewater. I forget the name of that one.
Mm-hmm. Scotia Business.
Scotia
Business,
yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And they use that group for all their coordination.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a key element to making this thing work because from what we have found, we've got the VON, we've got Helping Hands, we've got Senior Safety, we've got the Health Board, we've got this group and that group and that group and that group. All doing their own little thing. And there's no one really pulling this all together. And that's where we're trying to get someone, this is what we're proposing, someone to coordinate this. And if they get a call, then it can be just fingered out to the individuals. We think that that would, but that's a good idea.
And if I may, continuing on like local resources, I'm looking at, you know, you have, VON have volunteer drivers for their program.
Yes.
And I know when we had big events here, when we had the curling event and we had the Nova Scotia Music Week, the people from the community came out and offered their driving skills to volunteer to shuttle back and forth. I
mm-hmm.
mean, that might be an area where you could get names, people could get names of, okay, who has done that? And maybe they've never even thought of getting involved in this program, but I could offer a few hours a week or whatever.
No, that's a critical element to making this transit system work, is to have the volunteer drivers.
Yeah.
And to start with, the one fellow who used to work at the liquor store, he used to drive school bus.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken with him, and he said, yes, great idea, I'd love to help.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right, there are people out there that have a very positive attitude
mm-hmm.
to help make this work.
So if you're looking for funding and funding qualifies for, okay, you got the program, you know, you got the basis of the program or the foundation of it, they're probably going to ask you, what are you using for this resource that costs you less money, or where's your volunteer activity? So, I mean, if you put together a bank of the local resources, then, you know, anytime you could do that with the thought of maybe when this program is, and I'm thinking positively, when we do have this available to us, we know that we have these people to support us.
Thank you. I'll put your name at the top of the list.
I'm always there, you know that.
Councilor Fisk?
Just wondering, are you far enough in the project to maybe start a pilot project finding out if it works with bringing transportation, using some sort of a vehicle to try it out in the area?
Yeah.
With all.
Did you want to answer that? Or?
Sure, definitely. So I would envision trying specific projects, and we would need to go back to the group to see more opportunities because there are assets in the community. I know with, for example, for the region, while we wouldn't be able to make the Hillsview bus a permanent fixture of a program, it might be available to be used to support, for example, an event. You know, we tried the youth event in the fall, bring some youth from Caledonia in. So there are opportunities to do that, and that's what we really need to do is, you know, the feasibility generally says, yes, you know, this is possible, and then the next step is to really plan it and start testing to see what might work and what's out there.
Just the reason I say that is, for example, we're thinking North Queens, Fort Pitman area, to maybe venture out in that area to bring them in shopping,
yep.
groceries or doctor's appointments, whatever. Just to see if see how they accept the program.
Expanding on Richard's comments there, we attempted here a month or so ago to use two buses, one from Hillsview, which we had to get approval from Richard first to use that one. And then we went also to the North Queens Manor for the utilization of their bus, so that we were thinking of running, per this design here on the routing, to run a north-south run from Caledonia into Liverpool, and then use the Hillsview bus to do the east-west run from Port Medway to Liverpool and Port Mattoon, Liverpool. We didn't quite get it together, but we feel that would have worked if we had spent more time.
You know, just to comment on that, and would it be for a short time you'd be using that vehicle, both vehicles?
Yes.
Like, what's the time span on that?
I would say the best we could do would be 2 days a week with the North Queens bus. And from talking to the lady at the at Fieldsview, I believe it was one time only, Richard.
Yeah, it's difficult with the Hillsview because they need that, so it does pose a challenge.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, how long of a period of time would you need those vehicles before you venture into purchasing your own vehicles?
So what the programs demonstrate, if you get through this next phase or two, there is potentially quite a bit of funding available for a bus, both provincially and federally. So I think that you'd be looking at testing things over the next year, and it would be a future year consideration if you were to buy that. We may find we don't need one, and again, as Gary has stated, this is really a community-based transportation service, and the study has shown that the Art of the Possible shows that it's there, and it's now really refining that. There are assets out there that maybe we don't need to buy a bus. Maybe there's the things, and the coordination, as indicated, is really the key thing to unlock the usage of the current assets in the community. So there's work to do.
Yeah, but to make my point, you wouldn't use Hillsview on a permanent basis year round.
No, absolutely not.
And then it would finally just phase away from
right.
the bus. That's what I'm asking.
Correct. I wouldn't imagine.
It would be
we can't count on the Hillsview bus
to handle the problem.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Johnson?
I think just to expand on Councilor Fisk's comments, is, you know, this group is learning, and I have to explain the fact that I am part of the Queen's Care Society and been working on this. To that point, we're learning from the study that they're doing in Bridgewater, because there are other capital equipment available, like maybe borrowing an older bus from HRM, which they're doing, you know, and understanding what else resources are out there. The key to doing the early stages is, first of all, to get the people used to the service, to make sure it is feasible and they can use it. And phase two and three of the study is going to lead us to that. But in the same time, the working group are going off and doing some things in the tangent, which will bring it back around and close the loop with the consultant. And the other piece is an economic development side of it, where it fits into our strategic pillars. The economic development is when those folks get into town here or get into Caledonia. That's where local entrepreneurship, local businesses really take over, because this isn't going to be stop it here and stop it there. It's going to be getting to it. Hopefully that's what the model will look like, get to here and then let the local businesses take over from there. And one of the things that never made it to the feasibility study, but we picked up the other night at the EMO piece, that if we had a transit system, time of evacuation planning and stuff like that. That's another whole mode of where the system would come in and help. You know, it fits so many buckets of where our key indicators are, and the feedback from many of the people in the gallery today, you know, have led WSP into that group. So now it's something that all this needs to be factored in. But a lot of it is, where do we get the resource that we don't tap into, you know, and we don't destroy business? Because we really have to be careful that we're saying we're going to haul business in from Caledonia. Well, Caledonia has a business hub of their own, so you know, I understand.
Councilor Fisk?
Just to continue on with the conversation. So there's appointments that need to be in Halifax, for example, doctor's appointments. Are we going to, is this going to cater to them at all? Or
sorry, I wouldn't say our bus, but maybe the coordinator might have something.
No, I mean in the program itself.
Yes, what we have discussed in moving people like that is we could move people through volunteer drivers, like utilizing the VON vehicle, get them from here to Chester, and coordinate somebody in Chester to take them from there to wherever into Halifax, and the same return. It's utilizing this gear that's out there. Then this is what we need. Instead of one person driving from Liverpool straight into Halifax, that person can stay here and utilize everything else along the route.
Just for an example, the pharmacy in Middleton had their own van that they used weekly to go back and forth to Halifax for people who needed appointments in the valley and whatever. And it worked out for quite a while, but I think since then it's been off the road because there wasn't enough utilization of the bus or the van. But yeah, really important that we look into that.
Boy, that's key. That's another key element, yes.
Well, that's part of the partnership, because our work with the Nova Scotia Health Authority is we're working at, let's say, just for instance, let's deal with the Western region, Bridgewater, Kentville, and Yarmouth, who are now the central points of that strategy. Is if book all the appointments for, let's say, for instance, MRIs on a Tuesday for people from the South Shore, and that links bigger with our overall partnership to be able to say, okay, if Thursday is the day that we're going to do MRIs for the South Shore in Kentville, then it only makes more sense to be able to coordinate that transportation system. So we've looked at some of those things, and certainly not everything.
Councilor Vancey?
Yes, Gary, really, really good job. I mean, you both have worked very, very diligent at this. And again, I look at what Bridgewater is doing. They're even expanding. I'm hearing more and more things there. So it's working. It's working better. It's just a matter of getting the system up and getting people used to it. As you say, you start going around, you're going to probably not many people use it because they're not going to be used to it. They're going to have to get a comfort level, which is going to have to come. I noticed that over half the people are within 10 minutes. Your numbers there, over 7,000 people are within 10 minutes of the. Initial run through there isn't going to take long to get over half the people to be able to get to where they want to be. You talked about the $5 round trip, which everybody's looking at too, and they want to pay under $5. But then that means that, again, it's getting it all together so you can get enough people in there to places like, as we talk here about with taxis and such, they have to have enough people. $5 in gas isn't going to go for your car. You're going to have to have enough people into the taxi to be able to make it worthwhile. And the other thing, too, is a lot of older people have got cars that, I shouldn't say it, but shouldn't probably be on the road, really, driving, which is going to help everybody as a whole, you know, to be able. So I think the whole idea is again, as you're trying to start something, and then work it from there. My big question would be is like things like Bridgewater, because a lot of appointments are in Bridgewater. How do you go like from Liverpool to Caledonia, pick them up, take them to Bridgewater, back to? Things like that. Is that like a cycle? Like you envision it being, I understand what you're saying about when they're going to Halifax, you're taking the Bridgewater, and yes, they take something and catch code. But on in a cycle like that, like a triangle, Caledonia, Liverpool, Bridgewater, Poignant, and things like that, that would probably have to be on our own plan, I guess.
Yeah, we're looking at utilizing this coordinator to pull these
okay.
together. And we had also thought, and I got shot down on it, looking at taking some of these people going to Bridgewater, which currently use the ambulance.
Yes.
I thought, well, maybe we could move people and save money there. But then our drivers are not qualified to be handling people that are being moved by the ambulance. So that's a no-no. We're not going to be moving people.
Right.
And so there's a two-sided blade here. Yes, we can move some people to Bridgewater who have an eye appointment or something,
right.
something like that. But someone going for blood work and testing in there where they need to be carried by the ambulance, we're not interfering with that or suggesting. That answer?
Somewhat. It's still that same question about, Richard Green.
So I think that, and this is where the next things go, is test and trials. And as Gary has indicated, that the concept that Queen's Care is focusing on is getting a coordinator to start getting someone to assemble all of these needs and all of these assets is really going to be the next step. So, you know, this first phase that we've studied showed that, this is possible. And I think what Queen's Care is saying is it's more about the people than the vehicles and coordinating all of those things. So there's more work to do with that. So, you know, he may have all the answers today. I don't.
So I think Mike's got the answers.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that stuff, I guess the details will be worked out in the next phase, I guess. We've determined with the study that there is a need. So the next stage is developing that business plan, the particular details that would need to be put in play to make an effective system. So, but in the interim, there's little things we can do to be testing the waters, special events, and things like that to kind of help promote and get the word out there that this is what we're looking at prior to implementation of a full blown system. So. So there's a lot of details, and there's a lot of assets out there. And as Gary and Richard both mentioned, the coordinator position going to Bridgewater, perhaps we get them to one point, and the coordinator makes that connection with other services or assets that exist along the South Shore and beyond.
Right.
So
that coordinator position also can afford us to do other coordination, like helping hands piece. You know, several different people feeding into it. I don't want to leave the impression that the coordinator is just for the transportation piece, even though it is huge. It's going to be like an air traffic controller for sure. And the funding side of it, there's a host of models across the province of different funding models, whether it's private sponsorship or, for instance, tires from Michelin or insurance from an insurance company and things like that. So that's all factoring into the fee, if any fee.
Gary, when you mentioned about EHS and about the transportation, someone did.
Yes.
Of transportation of patients who are very capable of traveling in a regular vehicle to get tests done at another hospital. I just happened, this is a personal experience, my mom had to be taken to the Valley for a specific test, and I drove in the front of the ambulance, and she was in the back with two attendants. So the guy was driving, and then she had someone with her. And we had a discussion about this, and one of the drivers said to me, you know, this is ridiculous. We're wasting a whole day by bringing, you know, not that we wouldn't and couldn't, but, you know, make common sense out of this, you know. There should be some type of transportation to carry these people to these other locations where they're just there for a 10, 15-minute test and then back again. And you know, I know we have the needs in our community of what our public need for transportation, but there's also needs that these EHS may say, look, you know, why don't we suggest something so that we can alleviate and have an alternative to us taking a whole day away when we should be back in our community for the emergency services that we're really qualified for. So, you know, there should be an open line of communication between these groups as well, which might be something that...
No, that's very important, and I think we would have to take that to the hospital board,
sure,
because
yeah.
I believe the doctors are the ones that dictate who goes where and
yeah.
how they get there.
Yeah.
So I think...
It might give you some strength.
Yes, and my colleague at the back of the room, he's listening to me, so he will take action on that.
I'm not allowed to say anything.
Correct.
Councilor Fisk, did you have another question or comment?
No, Councilor Johnson sort of helped that in for me. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments of councilors on this?
Sorry?
You can mention the AGM.
Oh, yes, I forgot that most important part of the meeting. Queen's Carriage Society AGM is tomorrow night, and it starts at 5 o'clock at Oscar's. And our guest speaker is Simon D'Entremont, who is a deputy... deputy director of the seniors, Department of Seniors, yes. So he will be speaking there tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon.
Gary, is that open to like anyone?
Yes, the annual general meeting certainly is. Cost you $10, Susan.
Text in the mail.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Thank you, CAO Richard, and thank you, Planner Mike.